How's everyone doing?
Good.
I'm glad to be here this morning. I tell you, I'm ready. Look, the Lord has a word. You know why? Because He spoke it to me already. He spoke it to me this week in my preparation and planning. We're going to be starting a new series that you saw on the screen. And it's the story of Joseph. But before we really dive into that story, it's I'm not sure how many weeks we're going to take to on the story of Joseph, but it'll take a couple weeks. But I want to ask you all this morning, are you anybody in here active dreamers? Abby, you're an active dreamer? Do you have dreams like every night, pretty much?
Yeah?
Yeah? Wow. Anybody else? Yeah, a couple. Chuck, really?
Oh, yeah.
Active dreamers. Well, you know, some of us are more active than others, but me, I'm not a very active dreamer. I don't know why, but I've just never, maybe when I was younger I had more dreams, but as the years have gone by, I just don't really have dreams.
You don't sleep.
I don't sleep. And that's part of there's a science behind it. That I was reading, you know, in my research of dreams, there's like a certain amount of, you have to be asleep, a certain REM or something. You have to be asleep to that part of your brain to do that. So maybe that's why I don't dream very much. But I have figured out, I'll tell you, I have figured out how to dream pretty much on command. You're like, what in the world? I figured out that if I lay a certain way when I fall asleep, it's almost guaranteed that I'm going to dream. If I lay flat on my back with my head facing straight up, it's almost guaranteed that I'm going to dream. So anytime I feel like, you know, do I want to dream tonight? I'm going to fall asleep like that. Usually it happens when I take naps. Or like on in a recliner or something, and I'm laying that way. Almost guaranteed that I'm going to dream. But in my preparation of this, I came across this article. It says, 27 Fascinating Dreams and Facts for 2021. Sounds like an interesting article, and I'm going to share not 27 of those, thank goodness, but I'm going to share a few of those. So we're going to work through those here up on the screen. But the first fact that I want to share is this, that we have an average, each person has an average of 4 to 6 dreams each night. So we'll get there. I'll tell you how to remember those dreams. But that's about the average. Yeah, the average person has 4 to 6 dreams each night. Number two, a typical dream lasts 5 to 20 minutes. Did any of these surprising so far to anyone? Not really. You know, maybe I've heard Jane actually brought this up. She's like, I thought we only, when our dreams, that they were only a few seconds, and it seemed like a lot longer than 5 to 20 minutes. So maybe, I don't, this is just what the article said, okay? But a typical dream lasts 5 to 20 minutes. Number three, blind people from birth are able to have visual dreams. That's a little bit surprising, isn't it? Now, I did read a little bit further about that one, and I thought, well, how, if you're blind, what are you dreaming about? What are you visualizing? They said, basically, they don't know. But there are blind people from birth that say, yeah, I have visual dreams. I see things. Now, what they're seeing, probably they can't even describe. Did anybody know a blind person from birth?
I was born blind.
You were born blind. Remember your dreams?
Sometimes.
Really? Okay.
So, and sometimes, like, depending on the dream, like, I can imagine that and not even see it.
Yeah.
That building over there. I could never have seen it.
That's kind of what I thought about. Maybe it's more shapes and different things. Because also, it did say that most of their dreams came from their other senses. Smell, touch, hearing. So they're interpreting these different things differently than you, but they're still able to dream. Number four. We forget 95% of all dreams after waking up. That one I believe. Number five, it's likely that animals dream. Now that doesn't surprise me because most of you know our little dog Spyro. You've probably seen pictures of your friend with my wife on Facebook. You've seen this little dog of ours, Spyro, and he's an active dreamer. When he's laying down on the floor, you know how you know he's dreaming?
Chasing something.
He's going to
squirrel.
Probably chasing some animal or me or something. I don't know. But it's likely that animals dream. Number six. Here you go, Jace. Number six. Keeping a dream diary boosts creativity. Or it helps you, you're able to remember them. If you keep a journal or diary right there by your end table, it helps. Does anyone do this? Keep a dream journal or diary?
I wish I got to sleep.
We'll get
might have got time for that.
We'll get there. But throughout my years of school, in high school and in college, I've had to do a couple of projects where part of the assignment was to keep a dream journal or dream diary for a certain amount of weeks. So I never wrote anything down because I didn't dream. And so I don't, it was just part of the class you had to do. So I went back and said I didn't dream. But I did see this past week in my Facebook memories, it was 7 or 8 years ago, I did see one of these dreams that happened while I was in college. And this dream happened, and I wanted to remember it. So I, at 5 a.m., I only know that because there, it's time stamped. At 5 a.m., I had this dream, and I wanted to remember it, so I took out my iPod and wrote it down. Because I wanted to remember it, and so this is what I wrote down. Can you read that? I'll read it to you. This is what I wrote down about my dream. Whale attack, lost my arm, was crying out for blood afterwards. I was on top of Q Ice Cliff with Tyler. We needed to get to people down below. Ruler said, I'll jump, but we both died and landed on frozen ice. I'm sure glad that that ice was frozen. Which brings me to number 7. It is believed that we can express our inner fears and anxieties in our dreams. So, I don't know what that says about my dreams, so maybe I was afraid of something. I don't know. Yeah. I know this is kind of funny, but it's all to say the point that most of our dreams, you probably heard this, most of our dreams are just discarding extra information. We dream stuff that we just don't need anymore. That's often what I've been told and heard, but the thing about it, in ancient times, in biblical times, people believed that dreams were very important. I know some people think a lot about dreams today, but even back then, it was of great importance because these dreams were believed to have were believed to be communicating divine revelation. That these dreams people would have that God, and even in pagan cultures, that didn't worship the God of the Bible, they would think if they had dreams, it was because some deity was trying to communicate with them. So this series is about not just a dream, but a dreamer, Joseph. Joseph in the Bible, we learn that he's referred to as a dreamer. So we're going to explore this story in the next couple of weeks. But first off, Joseph was part of what my commentary, as I was studying, Joseph was part of what was called, or referred to, as the dysfunctional family. Joseph was in this family that was dysfunctional. And you may be familiar with this family in the Bible because Joseph's dad, his dad was named Jacob. Jacob's dad was named Isaac. And Isaac's dad was named Abraham. Abraham, who we remember, if you weren't here last week, Abraham was who we learned about. Abraham was the recipient of God's covenant promise. And what was God's covenant promise to Abraham? He said, I will bless you. I will bless you and your family. You will actually, this is my promise to you, that you and your descendants will be what? Many. As he said, actually he says, as many stars are in the sky and grains of sand on the shore, that's how many descendants you will have. This was God's covenant promise. But not only that, he says, I will bless you and your family. I will make you into a great nation. Then he says, I will do all this so that you can be what? Not just a blessed people, will be blessed so that you can bless others. I will bless you so you can be a blessing to the world. It's God's promise to Abraham. And so Joseph is part of this family. We can already see here, as I named these generations that are multiplying, that's what God is doing. He's making Abraham's family into this great nation, many descendants. And the hope is, as God is blessing them, that they will be a blessing to the world. Now, there's a lot, to put it one way, there's a lot that has taken place in between Abraham and now Joseph. There's a lot of dysfunction that has taken place. But that's a story for a different time. This time, we want to focus on Joseph. Joseph's story starts in Genesis chapter 37. If you want to follow along in your Bible, we'll have it up on the screen. This is what it says as we get started. Genesis 37, verse 1. says, so Jacob settled again in the land of Canaan, where his father had lived as a foreigner. This is the account of Jacob and his family. When Joseph was 17 years old, he often tended his father's flocks. He worked for his half-brothers, the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. But Joseph reported to his father some of the bad things that his brothers were doing. Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other children, because Joseph had been born to him in his old age. So one day, Jacob had a special gift made for Joseph. It was a beautiful robe. But his brothers hated Joseph because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a single kind word to him. So right away, here at the start of the story of Joseph, we learn a few things about Joseph, don't we? We learn that he was 17 years old. He was a teenager. He was young. But not only that, but he was, his occupation, part of his job, was to do what? Be a shepherd. He was tending his father's flocks. And he was doing this while working with his half-brothers. His half-brothers, he introduces here, were the sons of Jacob, who was the father. And then it says, it introduces the mothers of these half-brothers, Bilhah and Zilpah. They were half-brothers because they had different moms. And Joseph's mom wasn't Bilhah or Zilpah. Joseph's mom was a woman named Rachel. So you're like, wow. You know, when we start off here, what do you think about Jacob? Kids with three different women. He has three wives? No, he has four wives. His other wife was named Leah, who was Rachel's sister. Okay? Dysfunction. There's a lot of different things going on in this family. But the point being that there was these half-brothers that Joseph had, and just how many, I'll tell you. Jacob had these four wives, and between these four wives, he had 12 sons. So Jacob had 12 sons, all with four different women. He had six kids with Leah, two kids with Rachel, one of them being Joseph, and then Bilhah, two with Bilhah, and two with Zilpah. Joseph was the 11th son out of the 12. The only younger brother was Benjamin, who was also from Rachel. So the two youngest were from Jacob's wife, Rachel. All these half-brothers, though, it says here in this beginning of the part of the story, they did what towards Joseph? They hated him. They hated him. They couldn't say a single kind thing to him. So the question that I ask when I'm exploring this, okay, well, why did these brothers hate Joseph so much? Well, it gave us a couple reasons in this text. First of all, it says, which, you could argue this is a pretty good reason to not like your brother. It says, Jacob, their father, loved him more than the rest of them. Okay. So Jacob has favorites. He favored Joseph more than the rest of them. This, when I think about, if you have siblings, this isn't anything new. Oh, mom and dad have their favorites. And you're thinking, well, no, I never said that. That's probably because you were the favorite. Okay? But I remember this line that my mom used to give us. I have three brothers, and we would say that all the time. Oh, you love either Curtis, Kyle, or Eric more than me. And we would all say that, so it wasn't just me. But we would say, you love him the most, and he's your favorite. And she'd give this line back. It's probably familiar. I love all my boys the same. You hear that and say, yeah, right. I'm the one in trouble, and they're not getting in trouble at all. You remember saying that as when you were a kid? Like, you have favorites. Or maybe if you have kids, have your kids said that to you? You have favorites. In our family, the favorite was Kyle. The oldest.
The oldest?
The oldest, yeah. He was 5 years older than me. And then me, Curtis, and Eric were all within 3 years. So the three of us were always getting into fights, but Kyle was just kind of, he was too old for that, so he never got in any trouble, and because of that, we interpreted that as he was the favorite. And if it wasn't Kyle, it was definitely Eric, the youngest, but
there you go.
I'm sure they're not here to defend themselves, but me and Curtis, the two middle, we'll vouch for that. But Joseph, it says, was the favorite, his father's favorite, and because of his favored status with his father, his brothers hated him because of it. We don't exactly know why. We can look at some other clues of, why was Joseph favored? Why did his father love him the most? There, I'm sure there's a few different things that contributed. Just from that first opening part of the text, we learned a couple potential reasons of why Jacob favored Joseph the most. Maybe it was doing things like reporting on what his brothers were doing wrong. He was a snitch. That's, when I was talking about the story with Cheney, she's like, yeah, a lot of people read the story and they think, well, Joseph had it coming. Because of all the things, you know, he's kind of tattletale. He's this little teenager walking around this different, with this arrogance. So maybe that's why his father favored him the most. Maybe he was just telling on his brothers of all the wrong things they were doing. Maybe it stems from, this is part of the backstory, but Jacob's favorite wife, can you guess who?
Rachel.
It's Rachel. So maybe he favored Joseph the most because he favored his mom the most. And that transferred into Joseph. Rachel was the wife that Jacob wanted from the very beginning. But you know that he has three others, and again, that's a story for a different time. But regardless of the reasons of why Jacob favored Joseph the most, it eventually leads to Joseph receiving a gift from his father. And that was a beautiful robe, my translation says. There's other translations that says a coat of many colors. That's one of the most popular parts of this story that people have come to know, was that Joseph received a coat of many colors from his father. Now, upon further study, they're not too sure if it was exactly a coat of many colors, because oftentimes what I picture, kind of see the person up there on the screen, this rainbow robe is kind of what we've always learned in kids' church, and these many different colors being put together to form this robe. They're not exactly sure it was that way. It most likely wasn't. But what it most likely was this long robe that wrapped all the way down around his feet and came up all the way around. It covered his, it was long sleeves, and it covered Joseph's entire body. So that's probably a more accurate description of what this gift, this robe, was like. But regardless of what it looked like, what I want you to focus on is the meaning. Because the meaning of this robe is really what matters. When Joseph received this beautiful robe, this meant that he had status. It was a status symbol. That robe that he wore meant that he was in charge. He was the leader. He was given this leadership responsibility over his brothers. So maybe, you know, part of the reason why all this is taking place could have been that Joseph was sent out into the fields to tend the flocks and to oversee his brothers, and so all this contributed to him receiving this gift. That because you are a leader, you were responsible, here's the sign of it, this beautiful robe. So all of this to say that there's this growing and this building resentment and jealousy and hatred towards Joseph from his brothers. I'll tell you, it only gets worse if we continue on in the story. In verse 5, chapter 37 of Genesis. One night, Joseph had a dream. And when he told his brothers about it, they hated him even more. More than ever. Listen to this dream. Now you could say, Joseph, just keep your mouth shut. Why do you have to say this dream? But that's what Joseph does. He says, listen to this dream, he said. We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundles stood up and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. His brothers responded, so you think you will be our king, do you? Do you actually think you will reign over us? And they hated him all the more because of his dreams and the way he talked about them. Soon, Joseph had another dream. And he again told his brothers about it. Listen, I have had another dream, he said. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me. This time, he told the dream to his father as well as to his brothers. But his father scolded him. What kind of dream is that? He asked. Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground before you? But while his brothers were jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dreams meant. So here we read about these two different dreams that Joseph has. And essentially, both of these dreams mean this. I will be your leader. I will be your authority. I will have a higher status than you. See, this concept is a little hard for us to understand in our time. But back then, in the ancient times, biblical times, families had leaders that were the authority of their family. The leaders, they dictated of where they went and what they did, and the families would follow. And normally, this responsibility in these times was given to who? Can you guess? The oldest son. Normally, when the lineage was passed on and from generation, it was normally the first son's responsibility to be in charge of the family. You're the leader. We're following you. But remember, who is Joseph? The 11th out of the 12. So it would have been unheard of, if we're working all the way down to number 11, would have been unheard of. And now here Joseph's saying, yeah, that's actually true. This is what my dream. And notice that I found it, interesting that Joseph doesn't interpret the dream. His brothers and dad interpret the dream. They are the ones that said, so what do you mean? Joseph's like, this is my dream. Do with it what you want, but I'm just telling you my dream. But we see how their reaction goes. Their brothers hated him, right? You think you'll rule over us, do you? And I like his father's response. Because not only were the 11 stars, but the sun and moon. So now he's saying, not only, and this would have been even more unheard of, because when was the leadership passed on from family to family? After death. The leadership didn't change until the other leader passed away. And so this would have been just very bothersome to Jacob, the father. He says, what kind of dream is that? In my translation, have you lost your mind? Have you lost your mind, Joseph? No doubt he would have been upset, and that's what we read. But his father pondered. His father wondered what the dreams meant. So at first, he's like, what is it? Have you lost your mind? But then he goes into this, I know, I have kind of favored, but I didn't know I was going to go that far with my favoritism. He's wondering, what does this mean? But his brothers didn't ponder one bit. They kind of reacted pretty bad. Their personal hatred, their resentment grew and grew, so much so, to the point where this is the key word, what were the brothers of Joseph? All this personal hatred and resentment grew to the point of them becoming jealous. Their jealousy, fueled by bitter resentment towards Joseph, eventually leads, as you would imagine, for something very bad taking place. The brothers, while they were out shouting, the story continues, the brothers are out working in the fields and tending to the flocks, and their father comes to Joseph and says, go give me a report on your brothers, basically, go make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. If there's anything bad, do like what you've been doing, come tell me about it. So Jacob sends Joseph out to check on them, and this is where the story picks up. Genesis chapter 37, verse 13. Verse 18, I'm sorry. When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance, probably because of his robe. They recognized who Joseph was. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. Here comes the dreamer, they said. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of the cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. And then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. See, their jealousy was fueled by what? Bitter resentment and hatred. It finally reaches a boiling point here. And I imagine that this wasn't just all those brothers getting together and not liking their brother. I imagine it kind of was just like thrown out there by one of them. Yeah, here it comes. Well, we should just take care of him. They're maybe like, I'm sure that there's this building and this boiling that was taking place amongst them. And that's what they do. They plan to kill their brother Joseph. And I want to tell you, this is how jealousy works. This is how jealousy works. It's not, because what do we often think of jealousy? Being jealous of what someone has that we want, right? Or that we don't have. And we think, because I have nothing, I want what someone else has. But jealousy is much more than that. It's not just seeing something or that someone else has and wanting it. It's seeing something that someone else has and says, because I don't have it, I don't want them to have it. If I can't have it, they can't either. That was what was was stewing in their hearts, this bitter resentment, their father's favoritism, and this authority, this responsibility that Joseph seemed to be getting out of nowhere, they start to resent him and hate him to the point of, you know, who are we? Now he's talking about these dreams, and we're going to bow before him now. If we can't, because we don't have this, he can't either. Now in our lives, what does this look like? Well, it's probably not like this, is it? Now sometimes it is. I'm seeing something that someone else has and say, because I don't have it, they can't either. You know this, how this happens sometimes? Watch Dateline. I'm just telling you. Watch Dateline. Me and Shane, that's a guilty pleasure of ours. We like watching Datelines, and oftentimes that's how Datelines go. There's this, these people that have these relationships, and because there's one person in there that sees someone that they want, and they can't have it, because they can't have it, neither should the other person. Now, sometimes that's what it looks like, but what, more often, what does it look like in our lives? You ever been around someone that that will do things like putting down others to lift themselves up? You know, that, what is the kind of forms does that take? It's kind of like, I'll compliment you, but in the process of my compliment, it's like a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you're like, thanks, I guess. Or you've ever been around in these people who, in subtle ways, mock the things that you do or others do? What essentially is taking place when we live like that or act like that is essentially we're devaluing them as a person, which is exactly what their brothers did of Joseph. That you are not as valuable as we are. And what happens is we try to justify it. We think, like his brothers, I imagine they're Joseph's brothers did. Like, well, Joseph had it coming, didn't he? He's acting like this, he's talking about these dreams in this certain way, and he's telling on us. Joseph had it coming, and if we're not careful, that's how we can, the attitude that we can have in our lives, is that they had it coming. It's actually, when we see this taking place, we think, they're the one with the problem, not me. And so what I'm doing is really just trying to address the problem. Jealous. Jealousy, listen close, jealousy is a sin. Jealousy is a sin that does something very specific. Jealousy is a sin that damages and destroys not just families like in this one, but jealousy is a sin that damages and destroys all relationships, one way or another. It destroys all relationships. In James chapter 3, this is what he writes in verse 13. If you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable way, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and actually demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, listen close. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. Hello. Right there. Wherever you find jealousy and selfish ambition, you'll find chaos, basically. So if there's, you know, I'm going to be pretty bold. If you can see things in your life that, like, well, that's pretty disorderly or chaotic, or in the world even, there's probably jealousy or selfish ambition. I think that's a good inference from this text. But jealousy is not a sin that just ends. It's not just something that is an outward effect on the relationships around us. Jealousy damages and destroys not only those relationships, but jealousy destroys you. Jealousy destroys you. There's a proverb in chapter 14 that says this, in verse 30. A peaceful heart leads to a healthy body. Jealousy is like cancer in the bones. Jealousy will destroy you. Sometimes we think, you know, with these brothers, we read about it in a few sentences. But I don't think it was just like that. This was a process that grew and grew in them, eventually to the point where we left off in the story, that they're ready to kill their brother. It doesn't just start that way, but it grows from a seed that's planted in your heart. That's what the scripture, a peaceful heart, meaning a heart with the Spirit of God, leads to a healthy body. But jealousy is like a different kind of heart. But in that heart, when there's jealousy taking place and being planted, there's these roots of bitterness and resentment that start to grow and start to just kind of consume all of who we are. And the analogy that came to my mind when I was thinking about this, has anyone ever seen poison ivy? You ever gotten poison ivy? Sure. But you know how poison ivy works? I'm not talking about just a little sprout of poison ivy. When I was a landscaper in Columbus, we go into some places where like that. That is consumed by poison ivy, either buildings or trees. You know what they do? How poison ivy works? Well, I don't know the science behind it.
But it's the liquid that comes out of the stems of it.
Yeah.
It's not the leaf so much, but it's the, once you break
it. Yeah. And I see the picture of what poison ivy does, because you know how it works is the poison ivy identifies something that it can overtake. Either a tree that is already kind of struggling. The tree is not healthy. So what poison ivy does is it takes root and it grows and it starts to wrap around these trees, eventually choking out the tree. Any life that's in the tree, it just consumes. It overtakes. So what's the solution to jealousy in our lives? See, this is something that I think I've talked about before, about the sin in people's lives. We often want to treat the symptoms. And I think that's a temptation to do that here. Well, if the sin in my life is jealousy, I'll just avoid. You know, maybe his brothers can say, we'll just avoid Joseph. We'll put it out, you know, we'll get him out, we'll avoid, or even, you know, maybe we'll just tape our mouth shut, or do all these things to treat the symptom of jealousy, bitter resentment, and hatred. But if you want a healthy body, what do you need? A healthy heart. This is a heart that's defined by the Spirit of God. That's what Scripture talks about, is the Spirit living in us. It grows not roots of bitterness and resentment, but it grows roots eventually to the point of producing the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is what? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. No jealousy, resentment, or hatred in there. So let God replace that seed of jealousy in your heart with his Spirit. The solution, I believe, is when you're filled with that Spirit of God, what that Spirit of God will do in your life is say, you have enough. It will produce contentment. You will be content with your life. You see, jealousy is essentially this. I am discontent. I am not happy with what I have or don't have, what someone else has or doesn't have. Discontentment with what you have or who you are. So the solution is to be content. But you know what will kill being content? Comparison. Comparison kills contentment. Because you're always looking at what someone else has. You're comparing your life to theirs. But I want to encourage you this morning, stop comparing. And instead, give thanks. Give thanks to God for who he is and what he has done. And this, I believe, will keep you, keep jealousy from taking root and sprouting these roots of bitterness and resentment. In Philippians chapter 4, I don't have this up on the screen, but I was just back there preparing this morning. I wanted to read this to you. This is what Paul talks about. He's going through some things in life, and this is what he says. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 10, how I praise the Lord that you are concerned about me again. I know that you have always been concerned for me, but you didn't have the chance to help me. Not that I was ever in need, for I have learned how to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I have learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it is with a full stomach or an empty, with plenty or little, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Paul's focus is not on himself or others. His focus is on Christ. And what he's doing there is he's giving thanks. So I would encourage you to do the same, is to give thanks to God. Now back to our story of Joseph, because I said, this is a pretty long story, and it continues. what happens to Joseph? Remember, he's on his way out to check on his brothers. They're planning this plot to kill him. So here's what we're going to do. He's going to come, we're going to kill him, we're going to throw him in this cistern, which was a well for water, and then we're going to make it look like an accident, that he was eaten by a wild animal. So that's what they're doing, and as Joseph's approaching them, Reuben, one of the brothers, actually the oldest brother, says, you know, guys, listen, maybe we don't need to kill him. You know, we don't want to be guilty of blood. So, instead, how about this? We just throw him in the well and leave him. You know, like that was a better option. But, it sounds pretty harsh, but Reuben's plan is to believe that while they threw him in the cistern, his plan was, when they left, to leave him there to die, he would go back and get him out and save him. So, it sounds harsh, but Reuben maybe was trying to do the right thing. So like, okay, yeah, you're right. We'll just throw him in. So that's what they do. They come, they jump him, and they throw him in to this cistern, which, like I said, was a large well. It contained water. The commentary described it as like looking like a bottle shape. And there was a phrase in there that stood out to me so clearly. It said, the thing about these cisterns, these wells, that it was definitely possible to get in, but it would have been absolutely impossible to get out. So what do you think Joseph is going through his mind? Because I believe we can all relate to feeling of being thrown into the cistern, the feelings of being in a pit where we can't get out, and also knowing the promises, these dreams that God has given us, and wondering, was I wrong? Was there a mistake? No doubt, Joseph would have been wondering these things. Maybe, I have these dreams, God. This doesn't look like the dream. They're not really bowing me. They're looking down on me as I'm in this well. Then I'm reminded of that promise that God made to this family, which was what? I will bless you so that you can be a blessing to the rest of the world. This is the promise that weaves all throughout the story of Joseph. But right now, in this point of the story, it doesn't look anything. They can't even be nice to each other. How are they going to bless the world? They're killing each other. See, this is the reoccurring theme that you will see all throughout the story of Joseph, is that what God does is take the messes of life and he turns them into a masterpiece. That's what he's doing here. We'll see this continue in the coming weeks, and I wanted to read this part of the story as we close. Genesis chapter 37, verse 25. Then, just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and they saw, this is after he's thrown into the pit, sitting down to eat, they looked up and they saw a caravan of camels in the distance coming toward them. It was a group of Ishmaelite traders taking a load of gum, balm, and aromatic resin from Gilead to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain by killing our brother? We have to cover up the crime. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he is our brother. How about this? He's our own flesh and blood." And his brothers agreed. So when the Ishmaelites, who were Midianite traders, came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern, and then they sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. And the traders took him to Egypt. And then jump down to verse 36. Meanwhile, the Midianite traders, after this, they go back and tell their father what had happened to Joseph. And as they brought back his robes, had blood on it from an animal, and he said he died. In verse 36, meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt, where they sold Joseph to Potiphar. Potiphar was an officer of Pharaoh, who was the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard. Next week, the story will